The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Habit 7, sharpen the saw.
What's the habit that will cultivate all 6 habits simultaneously? There is one. It's the 7th habit. What are you doing? Can't you see? I'm sawing down this tree. How long have you been doing it? Oh, 3 hours. Oh, I bet you're tired. I'm beat, really beat. Oh, why don't you sharpen the saw? I'm too busy sawing, dumb dumb. Can't you see how busy I am, see? The habit, sharpen the saw regularly, merely means personal PC. What's PC stand for again? Production capability. The only person over which you have direct control and immediate control is yourself. So the greatest assets to constantly develop, preserve, and enhance are your own capabilities. And no one can do it to you. You have to do it for yourself. You have to cultivate this habit. Now, there are 4 dimensions to the human personality that embrace almost every aspect of our life. 4 dimensions. And I suggest sharpening the saw basically means exercising all 4 dimensions regularly, consistently, in a wise and balanced and moderate way. Physical, mental, spiritual, emotional, social. I tie those 2 together because I suggest that our emotional life is manifested primarily and developed primarily out of our relationships with others. So that's why I tie this 4th one, the emotional, social, together. Physical, mental, spiritual. Spiritual means our value system, renewing our commitments to our value system. And that's a very private area of people's lives, but nevertheless, a supremely important one. And then the emotional, social. Those 4 dimensions. Now let's talk about each one and the place they play in the development of the other 6 habits. First, physical. How many here regularly exercise in a way that you're really pleased with? Regularly, again. It's like about a 4th of us here, maybe a 3rd. I suggest the greatest benefits of physical exercise is not fitness. It's what it does to your head. It's what it does to your self-esteem. How many would agree with that from your own experiences with it? You know what we're talking about, my friends? 2 hours a week. Is that inordinate? That's at a minimum. 2 hours. 168 hours in a week. 2 hours. 4 times a week, 30 minutes. That's it. In fact, the data shows that if you will go 5 times, it proportionately is worth about twice as much as going 4 times a week. But let's just say 2 hours a week, 4 times 30 minutes. You can do it in your own room. No special equipment is needed. Here are the basic aspects that the experts tell us about good physical exercise. 1, that endurance is the key thing to go for. Endurance. And that's what's called aerobic exercise. Aerobic means with oxygen. With oxygen. It enlarges the cardiovascular system. It strengthens the heart. See, the heart cannot be exercised directly. And all it is a muscle. It can only be exercised through the large muscle groups, particularly the leg muscles. That's why the running or the swimming or the biking or things where you really get a rhythmic, enduring kind of exercise, 20 minutes, let's say, 15 to 20 minutes, creates what's called the training effect in the person. The best way to monitor whether or not the training effect or the PC on the body is taking place is to check your pulse. Just try it. Just check your pulse either at your wrist or at your neck. And I will give you 6 seconds. and then tell you when to start counting, okay? I'll tell you when to start counting. Start. Stop. Okay, it's very rough and gross, I know, but it's a quick one. Write down, what did you get? What'd you have?
Seven.
Seven. Add a zero, that means 70. It was only 6 seconds. Been better to have done 10 or 20 or 30, but you see the point. That's 70. Now, to get into the training effect, you would take your age, and subtract it from 220.
I'm 34.
All right. And then you multiply that figure that you come up with by a fitness factor. If you're not in good shape at all, multiply it by 60%. If you're in good shape, by 70. If you're in excellent shape, 80. If you're like a competitive athlete, 85. So that might give you, let's say, 145, okay, for yourself. 220 less your age, multiply it by a fitness factor. 60.60, 60%. If you're in terrible shape, 70, good. 80, excellent. 85, athletic. Okay? Let's say it comes up with 145. Right now it's 70. So you have to go from 70 to 145 and keep it there for, say, 15 to 20 minutes. Every other day. Okay? That'll cause the training effect. Little by little, your pulse rate will go down lower and lower because your heart becomes more efficient. It pumps more blood, more oxygen. That's the training effect on your body. Second aspect of exercise is flexibility. That comes through stretching. And the experts recommend that we stretch before and after our aerobic exercise. It helps to dissipate the lactic acid so that we don't feel the same soreness and stiffness later if we do it after. And it builds us up to it so we're not overstressing the system all at once. The next kind are strength exercises, such as toning exercises or weights or things of this nature, or vigorous calisthenics, push-ups, pull-ups, sit-ups, and so forth. And the next one is skill exercise. That's the fun one. Tennis, racquetball, basketball, whatever, see? Those are the four basic kind of exercises. Now, if you want to do a minimal exercise program, if you're not doing it now, commit yourself to 2 hours a week. That's all. Out of 168, does that seem inordinate? Does that seem excessive? I mean, who could say it when it's the only instrument out of which our body operates, see? 30 minutes, four times a week. Some stretching and aerobics and a few push-ups or something like that would be it. Do it regularly. You won't like it at first. You'll hate it. And you'll feel sore perhaps for a while, but just keep it up. Little by little, it begins to happen. You have to be wise, and also you have to follow your doctor's orders and not overdo all at once, because there's a tendency to do that. And you have to be moderate. Some little pain. If it gets too excessive, you maybe do too much damage, see? And there have been a lot of those kinds of exercise injuries as well. But to push a little, to work a little. Now let's move now to the mental exercise. See, the mind has such great development over a number of years until people leave school. And as soon as you leave external discipline, sometimes people's minds atrophy. They don't do any more reading. They don't think analytically. They don't write anymore, at least critical writing or writing that tests their ability to express a subject in distilled and clear and concise language. That really tests people. Writing is extremely powerful exercise. And they get involved with TV. Really, TV. It's estimated through some recent surveys, is on in most homes 40, 45 hours a week. I mean, you think of that. That's as much time as many people put into their jobs, more than into school. It's the most powerful socializing influence there probably is. And then you're subject to all of the values that are being taught through it. Some people feel that it is like an open cesspool into someone's own home. But gradually, you once abhorred it, then you accepted it, then you embrace it. See, it can powerfully influence people in very subtle and imperceptible ways. But short of that, I think it is what they say, a plug-in drug. You get addicted to it. People almost can't make it through if they don't have the TV on. A plug-in drug. They can get addicted. They have withdrawal pains. Try it. Go without it for 30 days and listen to the withdrawal screams in your home. Try it and you see. And if you're still going through withdrawal pains, keep going. Cold turkey until you've broken it. Once you've broken it, then say, how are we going to use the television to serve our value system? Well, there's some very good programs. We have some entertainment and some education. Let's select those and go to them. It's usually best to have a TV room that's set apart so it's not just the most convenient place in the house where people can just come in, but they have to go to a place they've carefully thought through with some discrimination and judgment what they want to see, what they don't want to see. In our family, we've worked to get it down to about an average of an hour a day, and the way we did this is in having a family council where we sat and talked about this and looked at some of the data as to what's happening in homes. And the kids are very turned on to their schoolwork and their homework, so we haven't had much of a problem. But occasionally, one or two of them can get very involved. And we have found that by discussing it as a family, and by when you're not defensive and argumentative and harsh on people, they start to realize what happens when you get addicted to one soap after another or steady diet of this program and you just feel unhappy if you don't see it. It's a kind of sickness. What if you could get back to reading? You know, he who doesn't read is not better off than he who can't read. It's kind of a self-enforced illiteracy not to read. And I would give yourself a goal, if you do not have it now, of at least a book a month. And then move to a book every 2 weeks, and then a book a week. Get into the habit of reading. You can get into the best minds of the world. Good reading, good literature, not trashy stuff. And you know it serves no purpose. There may be some small relaxation and entertainment value, but overall, you want to develop your mind. And then get into writing. Keep a journal. Write your thoughts. Write your opinions. When you write letters, write good letters with deep thoughts, not just superficial kind of saying what's going on. People have lost the art of letter writing, the art of writing, ever since they leave school. I would just commend to you those have, as well as picturing, seeing, visualizing in your mind's eye, problem solving, planning, spiritual exercise. That is where you get the leap of your life. The mental, I think, is more management. But leadership comes from your value system. That's why it's so important to develop a personal mission statement. And on the basis of that, to develop some goals and plans and strategies to achieve those goals. That's a spiritual effort. And draw on what sources inspire and uplift you and tie you to the timeless truths of all humanity. People do it very, very differently. It's a very personal area. The idea is that when we take time to draw into the leadership core of our life, what life is all about ultimately, it begins to be an umbrella to everything else in our life. It renews us. It refreshes us, particularly if we recommit to it. This is a very private area, but I just suggest to you, we cannot ignore the spiritual dimension of our life. It is there, and it's restless, and people manifest it and express it in different ways. But it too needs to be exercised regularly. It gives balance and wisdom to the other two dimensions as well. And to the last one, the social-emotional. And I commend to you, my friends, this simple habit. 1 hour a day in the daily private victory. 1 hour a day for the rest of your life in the physical, the mental, and the spiritual side. It's private. The greatest battles of life are fought out daily in the silent chambers of our own soul. You win the battles there. You settle the issues that inwardly conflict and argue against each other. Settle them there. You feel an inward sense of peace. An inward sense of I know what I am about. And you'll find that public victories public victories where you tend to think cooperatively, to promote the welfare and good of other people, to be genuinely happy for other people's successes, will follow naturally. You see, a person with a scarcity mentality may act as if they're happy when their neighbor has a remarkable success, or their brother, or their working associate, but inwardly it's eating their heart out because they haven't really deeply worked with what they can work off within themselves. They haven't really nurtured the vital sources of their own personal security. Let me briefly describe 7 intrinsic sources of personal security as a kind of a composite effort to sharpen the saw in various ways. Now, you'll notice that every one of these sources is totally independent of people's opinions of you. You'll also notice that in every one of them, you're not being compared, you're not competing, and they do not involve possessions at all. They are totally within your control, and every one of them says you are intrinsically worthwhile and valuable, in and of yourself, apart from the rest of the world, because they're totally under your influence. First, personal integrity. The best definition I know of that, the highest definition, is to make our habits equal our values. Or better put, perhaps, to have our habits express our values. I hardly know a person that has achieved that to the highest level. So an operational lower level could be this: to make your deeds follow your words. You say you're going to do it, you do it. And you can gradually begin to make your commitments, your words, to closely correspond to your values until finally your values and your habits are in harmony. Integrity is the value you place upon yourself, the value I place upon myself. Second, a rich private life, to where you really enjoy being by yourself. You enjoy your activities, your reading, your meditation, your faith, whatever it is that you deeply are involved in, a rich private life. Third, nature. Nature bequeaths its own blessing on those who immerse themselves in it. It has such beauty. Well, let me ask you, how many here have been deeply immersed in nature for a few days, let's say on a vacation or something, to where you gradually left the noises of the city and you started to find yourself working in harmony with the rhythm of nature, and the beauty of it was overwhelming to you? And when you returned back from that experience, you felt deeply peaceful inside. How many have had that experience? You're hardly disturbable. You're almost unflappable for a long period of time until gradually the noise from the outside starts to come to you again. A frantic kind of vacation is not a vacation at all, but the kind that takes you into nature. And the effort to go into nature regularly, I think, is an extremely valuable experience, even to get animals around children because they are so accepting, or adults because they're part of nature. They don't judge you. They don't compare you. They accept you and love you regardless. 4, education. Continued education. A never-ending education. That doesn't mean just in the classroom. That means through your reading, expanding your mind, your mental capacity, taking courses occasionally. Why? Because courses present an external discipline on the mind, and sometimes we need it. Otherwise, we can take the course of least resistance and only study that which we are only interested in. I think it's an extremely valuable thing to train our mind to stand apart and examine its own program. That, to me, is the definition of a liberal education: the ability to examine the programs of life against the larger questions. And that's something that we have control over. It doesn't take money. People who are proactive can figure out ways to get education. Public libraries. You can get independent degrees at universities, whether you have a high school diploma or not. It's amazing what can be done if a proactive person really wants to enlarge their... You see, in a very real sense, our security does not lie in our job. Our security lies in our power to produce. That's the true security. Knowing that you have the power to produce wealth if you need it. That's true financial independence. Not that you're wealthy, but you have the power to produce wealth. You know it. You're not running scared. Next, service. Two kinds. One, in your work. See yourself in a contributive mode. Make a difference. Make a difference. Serve. And two, anonymous service. No one knows. No one will ever know or find out. Only you know. And the recipient may or may not know. That isn't important. But that you are interested in blessing the lives of other people. Service is the rent we earth. Hans Selye, the great international expert out of Montreal, in his monumental research effort in the study of stress, basically says this. If you want to live a long life, focus on making contributions. Have meaningful projects that excite you, that turn you on. Do not retire. You may retire from your employment, from your job, but get actively involved in very dynamic projects that contribute and bless other people's lives. His ethic is, earn thy neighbor's love. Now, his book is called Stress Without Distress. He talks about eustress is the kind of thing I'm talking about. E-U-S-T-R-E-S-S, not distress. Distress is where you hate your work, you feel totally victimized, you're not turned on or excited about anything, and your life is essentially selfish life. So those two kinds of work, two kinds of service, in work and anonymous. Next, family. When I speak about the family, I'm talking about the intergenerational family, the extended family, cousins, aunts, uncles. The more your kids can identify themselves with the tribe, the notion that a lot of people care about me, know about me, even though they're spread all over this country, even though I've hardly ever met them, I belong to this family. Finally, my friends, I suggest committing yourself to the habit of sharpening the saw. Every day, 1 hour, that's all, 1 hour. 1 hour in 24 will improve the quality, the effectiveness of every other hour. Talk about a high leverage activity. Is there any activity that could compare to that 1 hour? I cannot conceive of it. If that will affect the quality of them all, every relationship, every decision will be affected by that 1 hour. Cultivate the discipline to say, I will give the 1 hour every day. And do it regularly, day in and day out. Make your resolve now and watch the impact that has.
This concludes The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Dr. Stephen Covey. Remember, these ideas will be more effective for you if you listen to the program repeatedly. So when you have a challenging situation or an important meeting coming up, reach for one of these cassettes, pop it in your cassette deck, and prepare yourself for maximum payoff. Thanks for listening. And remember, when you need it, this information is right at your fingertips, as close as the press of a button. This is the end of Side 12.